This is Sports Jam, and my guest is the New York Red Bulls sporting director, Dennis Hamlett. Dennis, great to see you.
Great to see you, Doug. Thanks for having me.
It's been a wacky season. It's been a crazy time in your life and everybody else's with COVID and the restarting of the season. But we're here to talk about some great news that happened this week regarding the first mini pitches honoring Black Players for Change. It's installed at Westside High School in Newark with the Red Bulls' help and others. So let's get to that first, and then we'll talk about how you've handled the season and what's been going on with social justice matters and things like that. These mini pitches that you unveiled and you and others unveiled at Westside High School, tell us about the importance of them and why they were created.
You know, you're right, Doug. It's been a crazy year. And to be fair, actually, this is these mini pitches, it's a bright light given everything that's going on. So I think, you know, with the New York Red Bulls and the U.S. Soccer Foundation, we've created these mini pitches throughout New Jersey. This one in Newark was an initiative taken by the Black Players Coalition, which was started by MLS to fight injustice. What's going on in our country right now. And so to be able to have this first one done here in our own backyard was something that was, special for us as an organization with the Red Bulls. And I think just for MLS in general, just to be able to give back to the community and give these kids an opportunity just to be able to go out and play soccer and enjoy those moments that they can sort of get away from everything and just think about being a kid again.
What kind of conversations have you had with your players and maybe some of these youngsters since the whole, you know, racial injustice and Black Lives Matter movement and things that have been going on since George Floyd and things like that? What have you been talking about?
You know, I think it's been a trying year for everyone. And, you know, I credit our players a lot. You know, I think given everything that we've seen sort of played out in our country, our players use their platform to be able to get together and have the conversations. You know, I think one of the things I remember that stuck out for me was, you know, this is probably in the early days of the COVID back in probably in June or maybe May. You know, we sat outside in a big circle with all the players and we just kind of at a discussion and people were able to talk about, their views, their stories. And one of the most powerful ones was Bradley Carnell speaking about, you know, someone growing up in South Africa and how he felt the injustice and the racism there. And, you know, he never thought he would see something sort of play it out in our country. But for me, that was an eye opener. You know, I spoke about myself and living in Montreal, President mm-hmm. Burpo, the players, you know, we all spoke just about our experiences and shared a moment where it brought us together, you know, and I think it was very powerful. And as a result of that, our players, you know, they took the initiative and created they used this, their voice to make a stance and to sort of get the word out there. And I'm proud of our guys for doing that.
How about you personally? How did all this impact you?
You know, I'm you know, growing up in Costa Rica, you know, that probably didn't have the racism as probably deep rooted as it is here in this country. But for me, you know, this is something that I've seen since I've came here at the age of 10, you know, and it's hard, you know. I think it's when you see it being played and the kid, you know, for myself, just playing, you know, soccer was sort of my outlet, you know, to deal with it. And so for me, it was like when I was on the field, you know, they didn't see that I was a Black person. They just saw me as a good soccer player. And so that sort of gave me that opportunity to just be like one of the other kids, which I thought was interesting. And so, you know, I always go back and think like how sports brings people together. You know, it's in some ways you see no color when you're playing sports because it's all about one thing and one thing, which is winning. And so, but it's been definitely throughout, you know, I have many stories from playing college, from playing professionally and that you experience, but it's just what you do with those experiences, how you deal with them, you know? And I just always made sure that I stay true to myself. I continue to believe in myself, work hard, and just be a good person, you know, treat people the way I would want to be treated. And I think as a result of having that foundation, I think that helped me get through other difficult moments throughout my career.
You mentioned you moved to the United States when you were just 10, you know, to be with your mom in Silver Springs, Maryland. Was it that dramatic for you when it came to moving to a country? And did you notice things were different here right away?
You know, at first, probably the biggest difference, you know, we were excited, first of all, coming from Costa Rica to a big country and coming to the U.S. and, you know, the land of opportunities. And you know, we just didn't see things in Costa Rica as we saw here in America. And so from that standpoint, it was more about excitement. And the biggest difference at first was just our inability to speak the language, you know, to be fair. You know, I think probably got made fun of because we couldn't speak English as well as the other kids. But like I said, you know, my adaptation was quick to just being around the other kids that I grew up with and just playing sports. And that was sort of my interaction with them. And in some ways that leveled the playing field, you know, because I was able to play soccer, basketball, football. And so I think that helped. But as you get older and you start to experience things, then it became a little bit more difficult, you know. But I think, like I said, again, it's just, you know, I thank my mom and my family, because I think that, you know, we made sure that we stayed strong together, and we understood that what it meant living in this country and the opportunity that it came with, but also understand that there's a lot of history that's here. And so you just, you know, I always go back to just being who you are and try to be a good person, you know. And I think that if you can live by those values, I think then good things are going to happen for you. And I feel I've been able to do that.
When you look back at those days when you were just 10, and now the sporting director of the Red Bulls after a successful, you know, athletic career in soccer and then coaching, assistant coaching, and all the things you've done and with many teams, I would have to imagine when you think back at that time, you would have had no idea that this would be where you're at right now, a sporting director of the New York Red Bulls, right?
Zero. You know, I think it sort of goes back and the opportunity of just – being able to play soccer and it started at the youth level, playing on the club team in Silver Spring, Maryland, called the Potomac Mustangs. You know, at the time I was playing for, I'll tell you a little story real quick, but I was playing for an all Hispanic team called Los Lobos in Tacoma Park. And we actually played a team from the suburbs, which was Potomac, Maryland. And a man by the name of Jim Owens was the parent coach for the team for Potomac. And he saw me play. And he actually recruited three of us from that team onto his team. And so my life changed from that moment, you know, because now I was put in a suburban team, predominantly. I was the only black player on the team, probably with two other Hispanics. Those are the three guys that came over. And so my adaptation to living in America was through soccer. And so as a result of that, I think that helped me in the process of being able to get to where I am now. Cause I look back and all the interactions, the experiences that I was able to get through those moments helped me and shaped me to the person who I am now. And I think about from playing club soccer to going to college down, you know, 1 year down in North Carolina, Wilmington in the South, you know, again, it's probably not as easy. Then I made the move back to George Mason, closer home and playing soccer there, and then went on and played professionally. But again, it's just your interaction, your experience, you meet people and you get to see more of the world and it helps shape who you are and helps you prepare you for these difficult conversations that you're going to encounter throughout your life. And I think, because of soccer, I think it has helped me get to this point. And I just continue to believe in myself and work hard. And as a result, you know, I am in a position where I am now.
Dennis Hamlet, when he was going to George Mason after originally starting his soccer career at UNC Wilmington before he transferred to George Mason. And boy, you certainly took advantage of that because you became all region, all Colonial Athletic Association, three seasons there, and graduated in 1992 with a bachelor's degree in public administration, which certainly helps you now, right? That's wonderful. But you got into the school's Hall of Fame in 2006. That has to be such a special moment for you because not only, you know, in your current role, Let's talk about role models. And when people hear that you're a Hall of Famer in any capacity, you don't get that moniker unless you've earned it. Tell us about what it meant for you to be a Hall of Famer for at George Mason and your role model status when you go into a community like Westside High School in Newark and you talk to kids.
Yes, listen, it's a huge honor, you know, and I remember the day I got the phone call from our coach back at George Mason and that I was on the list to be inducted. And, you know, and I just go back and again, I think about my time at George Mason in terms of how I carried myself and, you know, a part of it is how you do on the field, but excuse me, but it's also how you carry yourself as a human being, you know, and I think that they go hand in hand. And I think as a result of that, you know, obviously I've made some impression on some people while I was there and they felt like, you know, this is a person that they want to represent their university. And so for me, it's a huge honor. And, you know, when I think about not going back and speaking to kids that, you know, be at the Westside High School or it just throughout, it's still about, you know, letting kids know that, hey, you know, you have an opportunity. You know, I think if you dream big and you have a good work ethic, it's not going to be easy. It's going to be hard, but you know, you got to stick to it, work. And again, it goes back to just being a good person. And I think good things will happen for you. And so, you know, when we sat down with these kids at the Westside High School for the mini pitch, it was just, you know, it was three kids that in my group, we had three kids that were there and you know, one was from El Salvador, one was from Ghana and one was from Nigeria. And I just kind of told them, listen, the stories that they're talking about, I said, I lived that, you know, I was your age, came through the same thing. And I never thought that I would be where I am now, but it's because of soccer and someone believe in me, in which, you know, you have your coaches here at Westside that they see something in you and they're going to work with you and give you that opportunity. And so, you just got to make sure now that you understand that what that means and give every day you wake up, give yourself the best chance. And if you do that, then good things will happen for you.
When we use the word mini pitches, explain that to our audience if they're not as familiar with soccer as they need to be and how they're going to be used.
Yeah, you know, you think of the best way it's a mini pitch. And I will give you a little bit of background. Like growing up in Costa Rica, every opportunity as a kid you get, you just go find any patch of grass or cement and you just play 3-on-3 or 4-on-4 if you basketball is 4-on-4 pickup basketball soccer. So now we've created these mini pitches where we actually it's like the simplistic where you take the parking lot and you just basically drop soccer fields on there, you know, just two little goals and surround it, put some lighting in and then you have a pitch. And so it's great for after school recess. The kids just get together. They, you know, they play 4-on-4, 3-on-3. Sometimes you can get as many as 10 players on there. It gets a little crowded, but it's just the ability that kids can just go out and get an exercise. They can play soccer, just be free and with no coaching and just learn the game of soccer, enjoy the game of soccer. Because when you look throughout the world and you even go to Brazil and places like France and England, most of the best players, there's no organized soccer. It's just pickup, you know, that's what it is. And that's where you learn all the things. You might see it on TV and then you come, you have an opportunity to try it, you know, and no one's going to say anything. It's a fair game. Just do whatever you feel like doing and let it go. And so I think these mini pitches give that opportunity for these kids to be able to enjoy that moment where there's no coaching and you know, it's right there. You know, you don't need depend on a ride. It's after school or doing recess. It's right there for you to be able to enjoy.
You're listening to Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. My guest is the sporting director of the New York Red Bulls, Dennis Hamlin. Joining us via Zoom here on this edition of Sports Jam, he's given his life to the game of soccer. So listen to these teams, Fort Lauderdale Strikers, Colorado Rapids, Harrisburg Heat, Anaheim Splash, Chicago Fire, Vancouver Whitecaps, Montreal Impact, New York Red Bulls, all part of the resume for Dennis Hamlin. So you, better than a lot of players, can really talk about the growth of soccer in the United States and especially here in the New York area. What are your thoughts on that?
It's been a long time coming. You know, I think when I look back in 92, 93, when I graduated from college and we were waiting for a professional league and you know, FIFA granted the U.S. The World Cup, but it's probably the first time in ever that they gave the World Cup to a country that didn't have a league. And I think 96, the league came out and it was amazing. The World Cup was amazing, the 94 World Cup. I think that kind of kickstarted things in soccer. You know, I think people start to realize like, wow, we can understand why this is number one sports because of the amount of people that came and experienced the World Cup in 94. And so I think when I look at the 25 years of MLS in terms of where in 96 to where it is now, just the growth of the league, and the opportunities for players to be able to say one day, you know, I want to be the next player that plays for your local team. And for me, that's the part that I never thought back in 96 that we would ever get to this point, that soccer is so big now that you have players that are young players that are playing here or moving over to Europe and having a major impact. So I think that it goes, a lot of this goes to a lot of the people that have made this possible. You know, when you think about the stadiums, the opportunities, just the media outlets in terms of the backing of soccer. They want to see the sport grow, and I think it's growing. And now to think in franchises are going for, you know, north of $200 million for a team in soccer, it's unheard of, but I think it's here to stay, and I think it's only going to get even bigger once we have the 2026 World Cup here in the U.S. So I think it gives all these young kids that are out there playing soccer something to look forward to and something that they want to aspire to maybe one day represent their local team. You know, I look at the Red Bulls in terms of, you know, we have one story, Tyler Adams, who's a young kid who started playing in our pre-academy and actually in the RDS program. And then he went to the academy and, you know, never thought that he would represent the Red Bulls, but he goes on, he does that. And then he represents his national team. And now he's playing over in Europe in one of the biggest stages in the world. And so it just tells kids that, hey, you know, I can be the next one. And I think for me, that's the most powerful thing that our sport has been able to give all these kids that are playing.
The U.S. soccer was a part of the announcement this past week in Newark. Why would Dennis Hamlett want to move to the front office? You know, you where did that decision come in for you? Where was that moment where you said, okay, I've had my playing career, I've had my coaching career, and now I want to be really in control of the team?
You know, I'll give you a little bit back, part you probably don't know, but, you know, in 97, after my second year in MLS, I ended up having a stroke as a result of playing. And so, you know, I came to a crossroads. Do I continue to play and put myself at more jeopardy? And I decided that, you know, I didn't want to do that. And so I wanted to make sure I stay close to the game. And so I said, oh, this is a new challenge. I want to get into coaching and learn that. And so I started from the ground up and I worked my way. It took me 10 years to become the head coach. And so I spent a good time being a coach, you know, from basically 98 to 2017. And I felt like, you know, the next challenge for me now was, okay, what is it like to be a sporting director? You know, I do have a good understanding of the league and I've played the game and now I just want to learn on the business side. And, you know, I'm thankful that Red Bulls is an amazing organization that gives you an opportunity to grow and develop as a person and opportunities. And so when the moment came that, you know, I had the opportunity to become the sporting director, I jumped at it because I felt like it was a challenge for me and I wanted to grow. And I think that's, you know, in life, it's all about growing. You know, you want to make sure you challenge yourself and push yourself so you can be the best. And this was a big challenge and, you know, I'm thankful for it. It wasn't easy. You know, I think there are difficult moments at times when, you know, you go from playing and understanding and being in the coaching world and in the locker room, and it's a little different now in a boardroom. And so that was an adaptation process, but, you know, I'm thankful for going through it because it's made me a better person.
How many times do you go back to the point where you had that stroke and how it changed your life and where things have gone on since then?
You know, everything in life happens for a reason. You know, I always stick to that. I'm a strong believer in that. And I always believe that, you know, it's about the man above gives you, challenges you and puts you in positions to see how you're going to handle them and to see how you're going to come out. And so I always said, you know, put my best foot forward, and keep going, you know, and again, it's the belief in being a good person. You know, I think that's one thing I'm proud of here with the Red Bulls. It's still about our culture, about our people, about being a good teammate. You know, those are the foundation that the Red Bull we're about. And I think that it coincides with, you know, when I think about being a coach and being a sporting director, you just want to make sure that you create a culture of good people, people that want to fight for the same common goal and be good teammates and work together. And I think, if you have that, you can overcome any obstacles that are put in front of you.
Speaking of obstacles, Dennis Hamlett, yeah, he has his bachelor's degree in public administration, inducted into the George Mason Hall of Fame, had a successful athletic career, successful coaching career, and now in the front office as the sporting director for the New York Red Bulls. All that great experience, but none of that mattered when COVID hit, did it? Because it became a truly different experience for anyone.
Yes, you're right. No playbook for when COVID hit, you know, and I think it was something that hit our country hard, you know, because there's a lot of uncertainties. You didn't know what to expect. And like I said, no playbooks. And so, again, I commend the Red Bull organization, because I think from the moment that COVID hit, you know, the communication, it's interesting. And when you look at, when you go through a crisis or in this case, the pandemic, how much closer it brought us as an organization in terms of communication, in terms of, you know, our weekly meetings. And so I think it just showed, again, the commitment to work together and stick together, and you'll be able to come through these moments of uncertainty, because no one really knew when it was going to end, what was going to happen. You know, I go back to the first day. Oh, you know, we're going to cancel the game going to Minnesota, and thinking we could play the next weekend. But then that got pushed back, and everything's get pushed back. And you know, those 3 months of trying to keep the group together and the Zoom calls, credit the players for training on their own, going to parks and being kicked off of parks because they're not allowed to be out in the parks because everyone's supposed to be staying at home, and to our guys, making sure we take bikes and equipment to their homes so they can stay fit and work out and to be able to do workouts. And then again, and now on the business side of it, just how connected we got in our weekly, leadership team meetings that we had, the Zoom calls, and just the constant communication. I think that's something that I'm proud of, that as an organization, we were able to do and kept everyone in a moment of difficult, ease their anxiety and made them feel part, they felt part of the connection, because it was easy to get lost during the early days of COVID, where, you know, no one's going in the office, and now you just feel like you're just out there and you know, what's going on. And I think that's something that, you know, Mark, the Grand Prix, our general manager, made sure that we wanted to make sure we stay connected and make sure we checked on the well-being of each person, because in these moments, it's one of the most difficult things. And so, you know, I think and looking back now, I think it's made us so much a stronger organization, and we've come out of it pretty well.
Bello, high. Nealis got a head on it. This ball takes a deflection. Nealis again plays into space, played across, goal! Almir Fernandez with the finish. Flag stays down. Red Bulls have a 1-0 lead.
Season's about, as we do this sports jam, is about 15 games into the season. And what do you want to say to the fans of the Red Bulls that, you know, really are still clinging and want to be a part of that whole atmosphere, that wonderful atmosphere that, you know, that goes on in Harrison?
You know, I would tell them that we're getting close. We're getting close, that we're going to be able to be connected sooner than later. You know, I think about when, you know, one moment we didn't think there was going to be a league. We weren't going to have a season, but then somehow we the league, to their credit, created this bubble in Orlando just to get soccer back, you know. And then the question was like, okay, what's going to happen after the Orlando? And then we were able to get back in market, you know, and it was with no fans. But now it's starting to see certain cities are starting to get fans back in. And so what I would tell our loyal fans in Newark Harrison that, you know, the day is coming that you're going to be able to walk into Red Bull Arena and see your favorite team play a game again. So for right now, the best we can do is with no fans, but we hear you. We know you're supporting us, and make sure you continue to support us and stick with us, because like I said, we have 9 games left and right now it's up for grabs. It's very close, and we're going to make sure we give everything. We just got a new coach, made an announcement of a new coach yesterday. And so we're looking forward to having his arrival and having a major impact on our team. So just hang in there. I know it hasn't been easy this year, but you know, we're getting closer, and hopefully we'll see each other soon at Red Bull Arena.
You want to just briefly talk about your new coach?
Yeah, you know, Gerhard Stewart, he's comes from Austria. So he's been with the Red Bull family for many years. So what I would tell our fan base out there that, the Red Bull press is, you know, might have sort of taken a step back, but now it's going to be full effect. You know, he is high octane pressing and something that I think our guys are going to enjoy. Our fans are going to enjoy, because we know that when we do play our game and our style, that we can suffocate teams. And so I think, with him on board, we look forward to the high octane back again. And I think it's going to be great for our league, and we're going to create some chaos for our upcoming opponents.
Last question for you, Dennis. The sport of soccer doesn't exist. It never did. Where would Dennis Hamlet be?
Wow. It's a deep question. I probably would say, you know what? I probably would be back in Costa Rica. You know, when I think about when this all started, was, you know, I grew up in Costa Rica and sort of my dad took me to soccer games. And so and that was my love that I started in the game. And so if soccer wasn't there, then I probably, you know, my dad was a fisherman, you know, I probably would probably take in the footsteps after him. And you know, I remember as a 7-8 year old, he would take me out in the boat and go fishing. So I probably would say that that's where I would be. My wife always jokes, you know, I have an unbelievable sense of direction. I think I get that from my dad, because back then, you know, there's no compasses or nothing. He just goes out in the ocean and, you know, you can't tell which way is left, right, or and he seems to always find a way to get back home. And so I think that, you know, if there was no soccer, I probably would say back in Costa Rica and being a fisherman.
And I would say, after listening to you and enjoying this Zoom video with you for this edition of Sports Jam, you probably would have been a damn good fisherman too.
I appreciate that. Thank you. It's been an awesome conversation.
Dennis Hamlet, the sporting director of the New York Red Bulls, continued success. And thanks for sharing some really deep thoughts with us during these difficult times. And we know that the Red Bulls and the fans will be getting together soon.
Thank you. Appreciate it for having me.
Sports Jam is a WBGO News production. You can check out all the podcasts by going to WBGO.org/SportsJam. Or find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on the NPR list of podcasts and on iTunes. Until our next Sports Jam session, I hope to see you at the game.